This is Andrea,
Steve,
Jeff,
Katie,
and Sean.
And you're listening to The Pod That Jane Likes. Reporting live, we are here, night one in Camden. That was a weird show, guys, right?
It's a big old party, though. It's a big old party.
Oh, my God, it was a party.
It's a big party, and we have a special guest with us, first ever show.
First show ever, Tegan Gray. Say hi, Tegan.
It's her first show. Everybody's having a good time, and we can't wait to talk about it.
We sure can't. And you're listening to
The Pod That Jane Likes.
This is a DMB Society podcast.
I got a little sister named Jane.
And this is The Pod That Jane Likes. And now, here are your hosts, Jeanette, Trisha, Matt, and Sean.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Pod That Jane Likes. This is episode number 41. Woo! Is that special or what?
Come see.
So, we all put our heads together and we decided to call it number 41 because we're just so vastly creative.
I just want to go tell everybody I know.
Say hi to my friends, Matt, Trisha, and Sean.
Hi. Hello.
Also, I'm back. I'm back.
Yes. Hello, Jeanette. Welcome back.
I've been pulled off the bus. Dave pulled me right on off the bus. He got on, and he was like, is Jeanette on here? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, come on. Time to get off.
Let's go.
So I got off. Yeah. Well, listeners, we left you in Guilford, New Hampshire, where the three of my podcast mates here had the most amazing time and recapped their journey on our last episode. Check that out if you missed it. And since then, the band has continued to wow us through the Northeast with stops at everyone's favorite venue, SPAC, in Saratoga Springs, New York. Then they drove down the thruway to New Jersey and stopped at the PNC Bank Art Center, which a native New Jersey will tell you that it's actually called the Garden State Art Center. In Homedale, New Jersey. And then they went out onto Long Island to play at Jones Beach in Wantagh, New York. And then back to New Jersey again for their two-night stand in beautiful Camden, New Jersey. Beautiful Camden, New Jersey.
New Jersey just keeps pulling you right back in. It's like,
it sure does.
Get out.
Sure does. We have a lot to offer. I know you don't want to believe it, but we do. Now, if you missed it last week, we did go live on Instagram on Thursday evening to discuss the SPAC shows and some of the other shows that went on last week. If you'd like to catch up with that, that live is still on our Instagram page at Pod That Jane Likes. And if while you're there watching that, give us a like, give us a follow. But we wanted to take a deeper dive this week in episode 41 and discuss the intensity and the surprises and just how on fire our band has been for the last 3-4 weeks. I mean, it's been insane. So guys, let's jump right in and start talking about SPAC.
It's a torrid pace, guys. This is like, you know, this is like you have in baseball, you know, I love a good baseball analogy. You've got a hitter who, like, you know, is usually batting for average and then just goes on this, like, this torrid pace where, like, you know, the ball looks like the size of a beach ball to them. And that's what DMB is on right now. I mean, mm-hmm. There have been, you know, where I can be a little bit nitpicky from time to time if you've listened to this podcast before.
What?
And I've had very few things to really say in any sort of negative light, because it's just been so awesome. And so it's made me so happy to see, you know, every time mm-hmm. you're like, oh, you know, they're due for a stinker tonight, in the very same way, you know, in baseball,
right.
Like, oh, this guy who's been hitting, you know, 750 for the last 10 games is due for like an 0-for-4 night. And it's not happening,
which is
incredible. So, I can't wait to dive in a little bit more and, go into some of the specifics of what has made this, I think, the most torrid pace in recent memory for DMB.
Absolutely. I think, you know, even you guys were in Guilford, those two were great two shows. So, and you know, we're pretty always positive we're going to get pretty good shows at SPAC, I mean, that's pretty a given. But to go past SPAC and go beyond and go to two midweek shows, Holmdel, Jones Beach, and then even Camden, just to keep this momentum going and this fire going is pretty insane. And I'm here for it. I am here for it.
We did our Instagram live last week before Camden, and I think that we both equal parts were excited to chat about this insane run that the band has been on, but then also wondered maybe this is the weekend that things will, you know, that the shoe's going to drop, or
right,
maybe things are going to get back to the way they were at the beginning of the tour. And here we are, another two nights stand in, and we're still in the same boat. I find it so interesting because usually at the beginning of a tour is when, just naturally, because the band hasn't played for so long, that's when you usually find yourself being surprised and wowed, right, and liberations, and those first couple shows really debuts keep you on your toes. Right. Yeah. And this year we certainly had some of that, but it's almost been the reverse. It's almost been that things started out somewhat predictably early, especially when you add into the fact that it's an album tour. But then as the tour has gone on, it's kind of been the reverse of the way that it's been in most years, where it went from being predictable early to this past month has been essentially unpredictable from beginning to end, almost impossible to predict. And it's been a hell of a ride.
That has to be so surprising for someone like you, Sean. You know, to be like, to not be able to predict anything that's happening.
Right.
I think you go, it, especially the last couple of years, you can go into summer tours with some bit of preconceived idea of what it's going to look like. And this year has just really turned that on its head. I was doing some diving into the numbers just to put things into perspective. If we want to compare this year to last year, so last year there were 46 total shows played in the summer tour. 111 different songs were played. This year, to date, 34 shows have been played. And there's 110 different songs that have been played already.
Wow.
You know, so we're, and in addition to that, they're promoting an album. You know, so every single night you're getting four or five Walk Around the Moon songs. It's really mind-blowing if you compare what this year has been like compared to last year. And if, really quickly, if we go back to the last album tour year, 2018, 47 total shows on that tour. The band played 98 total songs.
Wow.
They're already way beyond that.
Right.
Way,
and we're
less
only
shows.
In 34 shows. Right. Yeah. It's pretty incredible.
It's something. This has been some kind of a run.
Some kind of a run. We're at a moment right now where they're going to pull out Hunger for the Great Light. I mean,
nobody asked for that, but it happens.
I'm just saying, pretty
nobody asked for that, but it happens.
Happening, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, that there's a lot to say about where how Buddy comes into this band, right? In 2018, it was his first tour. He probably had a very limited, you know, education on the songbook. And now that he's been with the band for 5 years, he's learned more and he wants to explore more with these other songs. And, you know, I think that's great. I think that he's at that point now where we can keep, and, you know, even for example, them just pulling JTR out of the blue at Forest Hills, that wasn't on the set list. And somebody like Buddy probably would have needed to practice that in 2018, where he doesn't have to anymore. And I think that speaks to his musicianship and how he is now a full member of this band.
Absolutely.
Can I take a second? And, you know, Sean, I know you're the stats guy. I don't want to rip the rug out from underneath you, but, here is what I attribute this whole tour coming back to. And this is sort of a microcosm for everything that, I feel has been good on, in the last little run. So June 9th, 2023 was the last time that the band on this tour played the song You and Me.
Wow.
And yeah, exactly. June 9th. Now think about it, right? You've been to shows over the past several years and you know, the show's sort of winding down. You think that like maybe there's one or two more songs left on the main set. And what always happens, it's always You and Me, right? Always, always, always You and Me, sort of like late set. And so I think that just that stat alone speaks to the fact that there's not this formulaic. We talked before the show, before the tour started, you know, you've got your A and B set lists. There's, you know, some songs that may be slotted in, but it seemed over the past few years that Dave was writing set lists with, you know, a You and Me in there. He would put in a Jimmy thing. There would be, you know, E1 songs that, you know, would stay E1 songs for a while. And it would always be, you know, most of the same openers, but they would be switched up a little bit for like the Friday Night Concert series and things like that. But now it's just, you know, everything is just flipped on its head, and it's everything that we've been talking about and that the community has been talking about and the fan base has been talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, as I said, it's a torrid pace.
I think to Matt's point, another thing that's interesting, you mentioned You and Me, Matt. Let's just quickly mention another song that kind of fits that same description. Louisiana Bayou has now not been played since June 29th, Summerfest in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Oh, and wow.
If we go back in time to in between nights one and night two of Guilford, one of the conversations that I remember us having was, okay, night one is behind us. Let's list out the songs that are very much, we're getting these songs tomorrow. Yes. You know, you could basically go to the bank and you could mark down these three or four songs we're getting. Bayou was one that, if I remember correctly, we all unanimously agreed on because we didn't get it night one.
For sure.
And here we are well beyond Guilford. And we're talking about, we're almost at the end of July, and it's almost been a month now since Louisiana Bayou has been played. And, you know, you could have, everybody maybe will have their own thoughts on that song, but I think more than anything, what this set list variety has done is when you're at a show and you know what was played the previous night or maybe the previous two nights, when Dave is being handed that black electric guitar, you don't know what's coming anymore.
Yeah. Right.
And that
true.
That just, it really wasn't the case for an extended period of time. You could kind of, you know, deduct what is left that hasn't been played in the last night or two, and that's what this is going to be. That just is not the case right now, and it is so much fun being at a show as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much fun that actually Guilford was my last stop this tour. And I added SPAC to Camden, and I'm going to West Palm Beach. I mean, why would you miss this role, you know,
right.
They're on?
I mean, this is essentially why we follow this band, right? I mean, you know, back in the 90s and the early 2000s, this is why I would keep going, because they would be on a roll. And it was like, mm-hmm. I got to go to the next one. I got to go to the next one, you know. And, you know, maybe they got that spark back. I don't know. It's exciting.
Very
something,
exciting.
Some switch was for sure flipped. And, you know, what happened after that Milwaukee show, maybe we'll never know. Maybe something happened, maybe something didn't. But we know that since then, it's been a treat.
And I think it's safe to say, too, that, like, you know, right after Milwaukee was Deer Creek, right? So we know, you know, you're going to get some surprises at Deer Creek. It's a band favorite, crowd favorite, right? And then, you know, then I believe was Guilford, right? So, again, Chicago. Two nights stand. Oh, right. And then, Chicago first. Then in Chicago, I mean.
Was wild, not too.
Notoriously, you know, famous for its great set lists.
Right.
In fact, people are always like, I've never put it on my list.
Right.
Because I'm always like, they never do a good show. There's always weather issues. Apparently, it's a terrible venue. And then that's where Late in the Evening came out. And that's where we got all kinds of tour debuts. And then Guilford, we got Drunken Soldier. And then, again, SPAC, you can expect a good show. But it's just insane that it's just been, you know, one after the other, consistently surprise after surprise at every single one of these shows. I think we can go down the list from SPAC, from Deer Creek on, really, and list us one surprise from each show at this point, right? Like, I don't think there's a stinker in any of these. I mean, I think Trisha, before we went on air, Trisha mentioned there was a run during SPAC night two where we thought maybe like, oh, it's over. And then Bella came out. So, you know, it's like,
save the day.
Save the day. It was a She, Samurai Cop, Jimmy Thing, Brick House, Cornbread. A little rough run. And then Bella came out and everything was amazing again.
Yeah. I mean, what a treat.
They just had to get it out of their system, you know, one of those.
Yeah. They had to just,
Well, the night before, I mean, still, I think that at the end of this kind of little run this little summer. We'll have a what was the best show, and I think Spack Night 1 is probably really still probably holding strong. I know Matt probably thinks, I don't know, Guilford Night 2, you know.
Well, I mean, Guilford Night 2 still holds the highest rarity score on D&D.
I mean, that's just a rarity
score. In case
score.
Anybody is.
That does not mean that it's the best show. It just means it's just.
I mean, I'm just stating. You know, we're just talking facts. That's all.
Yeah, true. Just statistics.
It was a Wednesday night. It was a Wednesday night in New Hampshire, and highest rarity score.
I think it's safe to also say the same thing, Trisha. That Spack Night 1 is probably going to be everybody's favorite.
Maybe Camden Night 2, though, with that Dreaming Tree opener and Drunken Soldier. Sure. Like, who knows? That was pretty incredible.
You can definitely handpick. I think there's 3 or 4 absolute standout shows in this month-long run that they've been on. And even if you look at the shows that I wouldn't include in those 3 or 4, they've still been great shows. Like, right. if we're going to talk about Guilford Night 2, and it deserves to be talked about, Guilford Night 1 was great. If you want to talk about Spack Night 1 as being, you know, potentially the best show of the tour, Spack Night 2 was great.
Right.
You know,
right.
So that it just speaks volumes to the run. Again, not to sound repetitive, but how impressive this run is. One last thing that I want to add is in this fan base and in this community of fans, and partially because the band has been around for more than 3 decades, it is such a big fan base. People constantly will try to pick out when the band has been at their best. And we've talked about in much earlier episodes of this podcast how this band has had different versions, version 1.0, version 2.0, so on and so forth. I just think sometimes that it's a worthwhile exercise to kind of take a step back for a second, and whatever you want to call this current version of DMB, this is just my opinion. But we are today, present day, in the midst of the best of this version of DMB.
I love 100%.
This version of the band that we have right now, and we've had this version since, I guess you could go as far back as 2018. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, this is as good as it has gotten for this band. And it is so much fun to be a part of it right now, whether you're at a show, whether you're couch touring, whether you are just set list watching.
Whether you're recording a podcast about
recording
it.
A podcast, yeah. Who knows when this run is going to end? Hopefully never.
You're right.
But I just think it's worthwhile when you're in moments like this to just take a second and step back and realize what's happening, because it's pretty special. It's pretty awesome.
I think it's worthwhile to take a step back and let the listeners know that there's a lot that happens with the four of us in conversations outside of recording. And, you know, Sean and Matt could be a very tough crowd. I mean, curmudgeon central. So for you to say that, I think really does speak volumes. I mean, to be able to shift the two of you into saying this is the best, you know, version of this iteration.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm happy to be able to say that. It brings me great joy to be able to say that.
Right. Know? I don't think they want to be curmudgeons. I think they just are.
No, it's just it's when you care about, you know, I've used this analogy before. Right. And that is, I liken what we do on here to sports and sports radio, right? Mm-hmm. There are people on sports radio that call into, you know, daily. You know, I'll use the Red Sox for an example. You know, as a Red Sox fan, I desperately love my team, you know, more than anything, and I want them to succeed. But when they go out there and do something stupid, I'm going to call them out on it. And that's exactly what it's out of love. It's like the most love that you can have.
Of course, we know this. Right, you know? Right. Yeah.
And so that's why it's like, you know, this is like I called into sports radio and I said, you know, take this guy out of the bullpen and throw him in the starting rotation, and he just, you know, won 10 games in a row, right? Like that's what I like.
That's what this is, right?
It's out of love. It's love.
Right.
I love it.
So guys, I don't know if we want to go quickly through the Northeast here and just kind of give a few highlights from each show and then talk about Camden, because we didn't get to talk about Camden on our live last week. So just let's take a little deeper of a dive into this Northeast run. And I mean, as we, Trish and I had already said, SPAC Night 1, probably the winner here. American Baby Intro comes back, which is shock. I mean, if I wasn't that eyeball emoji, I don't know what was. I was listening to it. I wasn't there, but I was listening to it live on the Friday Night Concert Series. And I think I screamed. There's witnesses. I screamed so loud because it was a Minaret's Fake into it, too. So I was like, ooh, what's going to be? Oh, not Minaret's Fake. I'm sorry. Madman's Eyes Fake. And I assumed Minaret's or Squirm or whatever they were doing. You know, What You Are. Like something. I was not expecting ABI. So that blew me away. And then also Shotgun comes back. Only Shotgun so far. Anybody else have any highlights from SPAC Night 1?
You mentioned, Jeanette, earlier that usually the expectations are a little bit different for SPAC. And, right. And you're right.
They're high. SPAC They're high.
It's a different animal. It's in a tier of the Gorge, and maybe that's it. You know, mm-hmm. We could have a debate if anything else creeps into that level. But the fact remains, it's a really special venue. Yet, these shows, I think both nights really exceeded what expectations are going into it. You look at SPAC Night 1 and you're talking about only the second time the Stone has opened a show in the past 6 years. You're talking about the first ever Busted Stuff performance at SPAC. Busted Stuff is a song that's been out since 2000, and here we are 23 years later getting the first ever performance at SPAC. You mentioned obviously American Baby Intro making its big return, not previously played since 2011. Shotgun, just the fifth performance in the last 10 years. And then the tour debut of Two Step, finally. People have been clamoring for Two Step. We get it SPAC Night 1. All of that was just the first night.
Right. We so still have a whole other night.
Yeah, you buy tickets to both of those shows and you have yourself a SPAC weekend. You had all of that happen just Night 1.
Right.
That is, SPAC shows are different, no question about it, but that even exceeded what I think, you know, especially a SPAC Night 1 usually.
Yeah, and then they sprinkled in a drunken soldier just for good measure.
Yeah.
Just a little drunken soldier sprinkle. Yep.
You know, and that's what I'm talking about. That's the kind of show that you're like, why am I not there? I'm getting in my car and I'm driving to SPAC Night 2, which is exactly what Trisha did.
That's exactly what I did. I had to honor the performance. I keep saying this because I just feel like, oh, okay, sorry. I'm sorry. What was I thinking?
I'm sorry I didn't. Expect? What was I thinking not going? I have to go there now. I have to honor this.
I have to honor this. And so I did. And I went knowing I wasn't going to get, you know, like there wasn't going to be topped. Right. Yeah, it wasn't going to be topped.
But then,
I don't know. It's pretty huge.
Yep. That was actually the only moment of the weekend for me, because I was at Dead & Company's final show. So, I mean, I can't like complain, right, that I wasn't at SPAC. But the moment Bella came out, I knew in my heart that they were going to do Lie in Our Graves. And I definitely had feelings, and I definitely had to be talked off of a ledge by my other friends.
They didn't even know that they were going to do
it. I know, which makes it even worse for me, right? Like, I'm like, oh my God, they weren't going to play it. And they still did. And I wasn't there. But yeah, I definitely had to have a little bit of therapy from my friends.
If you were going to complain, that's a good reason to complain.
That was the only thing that I opened my mouth about the whole weekend. I was like, Bill was there. Somebody sees him on the side of the stage. Like, I just was definitely not okay.
I definitely thought it was cool to see him on different things like Cha-Cha and Spaceman.
Sure.
That was awesome. Mm-hmm. Pretty awesome. And then they added Lie in Our Graves.
You throw in Lie in Our Graves, and then for the non-Bella performances, you can add in just the second time in the past 7 years that So Right has opened a show.
Great opener.
Yeah, followed by Pig in the Two Slot. You know, then the night plays out. Dave walks out for the encore. You get a partial 40 to kick off the encore. SPAC is always special. SPAC 23 was very special. And we're going to get into Camden a little bit later. I thought it was really cool when you see things like this taking place in the fan base. Night one in Camden, there was a gentleman down in the pit holding up a sign when the band walked on the stage, and it said, "Hey, DMB, thank you for SPAC."
Yeah.
And I think that sign it sums up what a lot of people in this fan base were thinking, because SPAC was usually is, but once again was a very special weekend.
He must have really enjoyed that She Samurai Cop Jimmy Brickhouse cornbread.
Yeah,
that's exactly what he was thanking him for.
Yes. Yeah, we'll get him on here.
We'll get him on here and see.
Yeah, our first guest will be
report SPAC that news.
Sign man.
One thing that I wanted to say really quick before we move to Camden is, I thought it was so interesting that Lionel Graves was not initially the plan for Bella, and like, what an interesting thing it would have been if Bella had come on the stage for just Spaceman and Cha-Cha. Both great performances. Right. You know, if you go, it was a it wasn't Sirius XM concert
also,
series, but it was
Don't Drink the Water, right? He did Don't Drink the Water. Is that right?
Yeah, you're right.
So there were three Bella songs on the set, and the biggest one, the grand Bella finale, if you will, was one that wasn't.
Right, which is just crazy. Right. That's still just crazy. Like, even, I mean, Don't Drink the Water, he's on the recording, but he doesn't solo.
Right. And I feel like his sound, that Bella sound that we've talked about many times before, it doesn't translate as well to how Don't Drink the Water is played now, because it's so much faster and more intense. The other, you know, the album Don't Drink the Water, you know, is a much slower tempo, and the banjo really sort of connects in an awesome way. I mean, I love that version of it. So I just thought it was so interesting that, you know, you have these songs that I don't think necessarily, again, Spaceman and Cha-Cha were great, but, you know, like 41, Lionel Graves, Last Stop, like those are your old school Bella Fleck songs. And to not have one of those in the set, I think if we had played those three songs and then left, it would have just been like that.
He's coming back.
I think in some ways what they did with Bella the second night of SPAC was almost foreshadowing what we're going to talk about with the next show, which was Homedale, because they bring Bella out, and what we got was two newer songs, if you want to include Spaceman in that, and then two classic songs in Graves and Don't Drink. And I think it's a really fun way, as long as you're going to have the guest out there for a number of shows, for a guest as big as Bella, and we're going to get into Warren here in a second, I think it's a really fun idea to have them play on a little bit of this and a little bit of that, some old school DMB classics, some of the better things that they have to offer with the newer songs, because the next show, when Warren came out, that's exactly what happened. You get Warren on, you know, a classic DMB track like Billy's, but then he also does his thing on Monsters.
Right. And, you know, Tuesday night in New Jersey, Homedale, I was present for this show. This is where
she got off the bus.
This is where Dave came on and pulled me off. Great set. Oh, American Baby intro opener, which, I mean, Sean, what you had, you posted a great stat on our account about the last two openers in Homedale, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Insane. The last, you know, Homedale, New Jersey, we talk on this podcast so much about venues that get two shows or multiple shows in the case of the Gorge. But here's good old Homedale, New Jersey, one show per year, middle of the week, and back to back years. It's that venue has gotten a shotgun opener, which had never happened before, and an American Baby intro opener, which, again, has never happened before. So back to back years. History made in the very first song of the Homedale night.
I mean, what did it feel like, Jeanette, coming off the bus? You're a couple rows back at Homedale, and you're greeted with American Baby intro, which I just experienced in Camden. And it's an experience. I mean, that must have shook you a little bit.
It did. It was, you know, I haven't seen the band because I was on the bus. So I haven't seen the band since Forest Hills. So we're talking early June.
Ooh.
So to get off the bus, and that's the first song I hear. And full disclosure, I was in like the sixth row right in front of Dave. So, just so everybody knows, if I could paint a picture, PNC Arts Center does not have a pit. So chairs are glued to the ground. They ain't getting them out. So there's no pit. So I had really, really good seats, and to be that close to him screaming that in my face, I was in it. I was in it. I felt like I was up there on stage with him. It was so intense. And I was like, what bus? What are you talking about? Who's the Grateful Dead?
Did you apologize today for leaving for so many shows?
He knows. I don't need to. He knows. He knows. But yeah, it was incredible. It was just an incredible show. And then when I saw them bring out that microphone, I was like, oh my God, there's somebody coming out. And, you know, I guessed Warren, and sure enough, it was. And it was like just incredible, incredible to see Warren again. He looks great. He was sick for a while, and he looks great. He looks great.
So happy he's
sounded great,
back and healthy.
Healthy, absolutely. And he's playing like, I mean, that Monsters is definitely the Monsters to compare every Monsters.
The
to.
Monsters.
Yeah. I agree.
I'm happy I was in attendance for it.
I think it's so fitting that while DMB is in this insane run that we all keep drooling over, in the midst of it, who do we get but the two most significant guests that this band could possibly bring out in Bella Fleck.
100%. Right.
You know, it does not get any bigger than that. I do want to just quickly say, before we go past Homedale, you were talking, Jeanette, about, you know, the experience. Trisha mentioned it as well, about getting to see American Baby Intro in person. This past weekend in Camden, SiriusXM did their annual State of DMB, if you will.
Right.
From DMB Radio kind of sits down with the guys and chats about what's going on. And of course, American Baby Intro got mentioned and was part of the conversation during Buddy's part of the interview. And one of the things that I found so interesting was Buddy talked about the fact that once it was decided that they were going to bust the song back out, he took to YouTube and started to watch some older performances. And, you know, for anybody out there that doesn't realize, American Baby Intro prior to this year had not been played since 2011. So Buddy has never been involved in American Baby Intro. And I wanted to throw some credit Buddy's way, because not only did he, you know, go the length of kind of seeing how the song was performed, I guess in some ways he had to do that, but he made it his own without taking away from what the song is. He didn't try to, you know, say be Butch in that moment.
Right. Or
he didn't try to replicate exactly what the studio version sounds like. It's very definitively American Baby Intro, but in other ways, it's very definitively Buddy Strong. And I think that that's such a cool thing, such a such an accomplishment to be able to do both of those things.
I mean, he sounds so beautiful too on it.
No, guys, not to not to bring the party down here a little bit, but I think that American Baby Intro is I'm curious to see where things land at the end of this tour. I know that there are some songs that get extra love because they're so rare in a lot of cases. And I'm very curious to see what the overall sort of where American Baby Intro just sort of lands in, you know, in the fan base and in just the memories of everybody. I don't mind the song. I think it's, it can get like, I don't know. There's something about it that, I've never really understood, and it's four notes and it's four words. I don't necessarily think that it showcases, other than Dave's scream, I don't think it necessarily showcases anybody else as well as other songs do. And this is a conversation for another day.
We're going to actually have this conversation.
Yeah. Perhaps we'll have this conversation more in depth, because I'm just curious. Like,
you're saying the memories, and I'm like, the memories of 2005?
No, the memories of 2023, I'm saying. I'm saying, okay. Is this going to be like, this was the summer of American Baby intro, and like, I just can't wait to listen to every version of this because it's so good. You know, or is it going to be like, oh, yeah, that's when they played American Baby intro. Or like, oh, yeah, American Baby intro got played like 20 times. You know, it's like every night, you know, you're going to get American Baby intro. You know, like, I'm just curious. I'm curious to see if it's one of those times, because there have definitely been songs like that in the past that have come back.
Sure.
And then it's like, oh, they're playing it again. Like, it was cool the first time, guys. But like, you know.
Well, our listeners love a good song debate. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're going to debate this because Matt has some feelings about it.
Sure does.
And I think that we need to break it down. When I say it's an experience, I mean an experience. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually think you have to be there in person to really get that full effect. I mean, it was great on XM when you heard it, you know,
sure,
it was the first time, and that was awesome. Yep. And the crowd went crazy.
But, and it was like, just a surprise. Like right. It's so cool to be surprised. But what you're about to say, being there in person.
Yeah, like my insides were shook. Yeah. It's an experience. Right. Like, it's right. So.
Because she did say 100 times. And yeah. She did. She also said 1,000 times.
Nobody's frigging listening to her.
Exactly. Okay? Story of our lives.
Anyway.
There's some interesting history with the song, too, that I think is important to, you know, to dive into.
And so we will.
We'll do
that another time. Okay, so let's move on to Jones Beach, because they played American Baby intro Jones Beach too.
Yep.
However, I think what was a surprise to everyone was that Warren came out again, which I don't think was at all, you know, predicted. Mm. I mean, you know, like, it's not even a two-night stand. And yes, I understand it's New Jersey, New York, and Warren's from the city. So both of these venues are pretty much like equal distance probably to where he lives. But two different venues and two different nights, like, and three songs each night. I mean, I think that's just incredible. And what a treat. And I'm so mad I did not go to Jones Beach this year. So mad.
Yeah.
It was such a great, great show. I think, if I had to pick, I think this set list was better than even Holmdel. You know, they got Boa, they got Love Lay Down, and Warren did Melissa, and Warren did Cortez.
Yeah.
And, what was the third one he did, guys?
Two step.
Right.
I mean, it was awesome. I would say for me, my biggest surprise, yeah, was Warren again, but it was a big eyed fish into Line Our Graves. That really got me. I thought they were going big eyed fish into Bartender. I was Bartender's coming next. Nope. And they didn't, I don't know if they said it was a fake or not, but it was faked me out.
No, I think it's definitely a segue into another song.
Yeah.
And when you think you're getting one thing and you get another, it's always a treat.
A little shock.
When you look at what Jones Beach was, yeah, I think it's easy to jump right to the end of the show with those three Warren songs. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't blame anybody if they did that, because not only is Warren, but you get Melissa, first full band performance since 2009. You get Cortez the Killer. You get Two Step to end the night. But I think it speaks volumes that there were so many other highlights in this show that they're worth talking about. The Big Eyed Fish into Graves is a great example of that. As Trisha mentioned, the first ever Virginia in the Rain opener. You have Best of What's Around sprinkled in there. You have American Baby intro. You have Break Free. You have all of these other fan favorites. I'm not saying that, you know, one or the other was my favorite. I wasn't there. I was couch touring. But I just think it's pretty remarkable that Warren can come out for three songs, blow everybody away with his performances, and yet there's still a whole lot of DMB highlights not involving Warren that's still kind of, you know, the cream that's rising to the top here. It's just, it's incredible.
Absolutely. Very upset I didn't go.
Then we head to Camden.
Then we head back to good old New Jersey, because you guys can't stay away.
Mm-mm.
And we go to beautiful Camden, New Jersey, and the pod is in attendance once again.
The pod is in attendance.
And this show was particularly important to me because it was the first show that I brought my daughter Tegan to. And we had the best time. We gave her the whole experience. We tailgated. She got a poster. She got a latte.
Great latte.
Great latte. And we just, it was a wild set. wild
it
set.
It was a weird night.
It was a weird set. Well, the flow was a little strange, but at the same time, still one, still surprises. Like, when was the last time we heard Help Myself, Sean?
2019, 3/10/2019.
Yeah, but then before that, like, what was that? You know what I mean? Who knows? Years.
Yeah, later. No, I mean, right, it's, right? It's definitely rare, not
it's a... It's definitely a deep track,
absolutely,
you know?
Deep
track. Absolutely. And I think if we, you know, before we go any further into this show, Help Myself in the 2 slot, followed by Walk Around the Moon, I do think it's worth pointing out that this is what DMB is doing during this current run in 2023. They could take a song like Help Myself, which debuted back in 1991, and they could match it up with Walk Around the Moon, which was released on an album in 2023. Mm-hmm. And the way that these set lists in the last month have been crafted, it just all works. It all flows together so well. I mean, you're talking about two total opposite ends of the spectrum with Help Myself and Walk Around the Moon. And it works. It more than works. It sounded awesome.
Absolutely.
It sounded so good.
I love Help Myself.
Me too. It was funny. It was interesting because the show opened with Virginia and the Rain again, which was 2 nights in a row that the show's open with Virginia and the Rain. I'm not quite sure I'm buying this as an opener. I think Dave tried it again, and it's just, it's not hitting. The crowd is like, what's happening? What's going on? It's just not landing. To then go into Help Myself, which is such a deep cut, like a real deep cut, that again, people are like, what is, like, we thought there was the, and you could see, I was observing the crowd, and there were like pockets of people like screaming, and then other people like looking around like, what's happening? Why are those people so excited? To then go into Walk Around the Moon, it was a strange flow into, to finally get like, oh, people, because then I think after Walk Around the Moon 41, right, which is finally when the crowd got locked in, you know? So it was just a strange flow, and you know, even all the way to Hunger for the Great Light.
Where did that come from?
I don't know if anybody asked for that to come back, but it's back.
Well, let's hope it's it's just a little peek in and not an
extended, a little dip in.
Yeah.
But then to you know, to end the show with the Stone into 2-step was,
oh yeah,
freaking incredible.
That has not happened. They haven't been played back to back since 2005.
Wow.
And it's only the second time in the history of this band that they closed the set with Stone 2-step.
Oh, that was great.
I mean, the Stone that late in the set is incredible, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. we're used to like the Stone maybe in like the 2 slot or right. like, you know, definitely first half of the show. But to see it there is just so awesome.
Wild. Yeah.
It's, you know, I think it's top 5 DMB songs that I've ever seen the light of day. And, you know, to go into 2-step is just fantastic. Well done.
It was a great 2-step. And to watch Jeanette's daughter, Tegan, kind of her eyes, like with Carter at the end and the drums, like it was pretty, she knew a lot of words, I would say, for being 11. I mean, she knew a lot of words, a lot of songs.
More than I expected. And it, you know, I'm just like, well, I do listen to this music a lot, so I'm sure she's clearly listening. But she really, that I think, you know, she's partial to the new album, right? Because it's new, and I'm listening to it a lot often these days, you know, a lot more often these days. So she was definitely wanting to hear the new songs. But when we got to 2-step, and then even the encore 7 and Crush, the crowd was insane, and she was just locked in with the crowd. Like, she loved every second of it. It was magical to watch. It was quite exciting for me to share my love of this band and my love of live music with her. It was great.
Awesome.
What a workload for Carter at the end of this show. I mean,
right.
You can say that again.
2-step and Crush, like, you know, and not short versions of those songs. I mean, 2-step, the Almanac has it clocking in at 15 minutes, Crush at 14. I mean, like, we know, you know, there's been some talk about Carter's stamina and everything, but like, he rocked it.
There's also something that happened night one that I think, as I don't want to bring the room down, but we must discuss this kerfuffle that happened in the pit night one. During recently, Dave pretty much had a meltdown. There was something going on in the pit, and we were too far away from the pit to see what actually did happen, but he was angry and mad and kicked someone out of that pit. And I've never seen in all of my years Dave so angry in my life. Like, he was telling this person to get the F out over and over and over again. And it shook him, and it shook
in the crowd. Yeah. Yeah. Seeing that go viral was really,
it was, definitely, you know, I was worried for whatever was happening down there. And I wasn't sure how he could recover from it. And he did, you know, of course he did, because he's a professional. But he was shook. He was definitely pissed.
I think we have to rewind too to SPAC night two, mm-hmm. during number 40, which kind of set the stage for this, where if you listen to the recording or watch a video of it, you know, Dave goes into number 40 and, you know, plays the first little bit, which, you know, is incredibly special, you know, a song that is held in such high regard by a lot of people. And after he plays, I think it's like the first verse-ish, he kind of stops, and you can see him in the video looking over, and there was a, you know, a heated argument that was happening in the pit over this performance. You know, who knows how long the song would have gone, who knows if he cut it short, any of those things, but, you know, just, it just sucks. We all have our own views of the pit, and everybody, you know, has their own views of the pit. And some people think that they're more entitled to be there. Some people like to sneak in. Some people, you know, there's a lot of things to say about the pit, but, I think that these two situations are a horrible look, and, you know, I would not be surprised to see something happen as a result.
Yeah,
unfortunately, because it ruins it for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple, guys. Don't be an asshole.
Super simple. So if you can't go to a show and enjoy yourself and be nice to the people around you, then what are you doing? Why are you going?
And no one's saying don't get drunk, and no one's saying don't have a good time, but it's very easy to have a good time and to not be an asshole. It's very
absolutely
easy.
Yeah.
I mean, as someone who frequents Getting Close recently, it is a lot of work to do that. You are giving up tailgating and finding the ticket and the whole thing. You're waiting for hours. Like, if you didn't wait for hours to get up front, you don't get to push yourself up there, which is exactly what the story is. Apparently, it's like a 6-foot guy barging his way up to the front. And it's like, you know, you can't do that unless you're going to put in the work. Which sucks to put in the work, honestly, but.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I think that there's a lot of debate here, because I think there is an entitlement that that some people feel down there, because I don't love the pit. I'll do it, but I don't love it. And, you know, there's a lot of times where even people in the back of the pit feel entitled that they're not going to let you go by. Mm-hmm. And, because, you know, you're going to your spot, but like, you were there first, but like, if you need to go to the bathroom or grab a drink or whatever, it's your choice to leave. And they might feel like they don't want to let you back in. And like, unfortunately, there are no rules. Like, there's no rules to say that you can or can't do that. And that's what I think that's where it, where it kind of falls on, venue. I don't even know. Like, it's sort of its own like ecosystem that needs to police itself. But at the same time, that's one of the reasons that I don't like. I want to have my ticket, and I want to be able to show it to an usher. So if somebody's in my seat, they have to move. But again, there's nobody saying that
in the pit,
isn't the case in the pit.
And I think this is a problem, you know, across the board. This isn't just our band. This is happening.
No, absolutely.
And I don't know, you know, and I feel like, you know, it has a lot to do with the monopoly that Ticketmaster is, because people are paying thousands of dollars to get tickets. Mm-hmm. So they think they're entitled to a certain experience that they think they deserve. And they're disrespecting the artists, and they're throwing things on the stage.
Oh God.
And now this is happening across the board, and like, you guys are going to ruin live music for everybody, and it's not cool. Being a fan of live music, this is, guys, just being kind. That's it. That's so simple.
I was recently at Goose, though, in the first three or four rows, and everybody was so nice and joyful, switching out on the rail, so happy. And I'm like, all right, like, we are so the opposite. Our fan base like,
we are fan base
very,
assholes,
yeah.
Well, but it's part of it, you know, part of it, and not to go down, you know, this could be its own jam topic, because I feel like we all have different feelings about it. But, you know, one of the things is, and you know, Jeanette, you mentioned Ticketmaster, you know, Trisha, what did that Goose show cost you? Like, what was face value on that Goose ticket? Like $30 or $40, right? Versus face value on some of these pit tickets, if you're doing, you know, if you're doing premium, is like $300 to $400,
right?
Which, you know, there's some people in, you know, in the fan base that, you know, they always post like, you know, I can never afford to be in the pit. I'm never fast enough to get, you know, face value. And, you know, I think that's part of it, because you have, in addition to, you know, people who have the extra cash that they can sling around for that.
Right.
You know, you have, you've privilege. Got all sorts of, you've got all sorts of people down there, and it's just, you know, in some cases it's a, you know, it's a powder keg, and I've experienced it, and I'm a very passive person, you know, in a lot of those situations. And, you know, it just you're standing there, and, you know, people will come in and think that they're entitled to stand in front of you, which there's no one there to tell them that they can't do, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah. And it isn't just us that has noticed this poor behavior in the pit at DMB shows this year, because it's been multiple times, right, that the band has this year alone tried to address this, mm-hmm. tried to
change the early entry rule.
Yeah, yeah. Get some new people, new faces, try to, you know, shake things up. So that is a part of it that is really discouraging to me, because it's one thing for it to be affecting the audience's time at a show. And that is certainly happening far too often this year. But it's a whole nother thing if it's escalating to the point that band management or the band or whomever is having to get involved in that and change policies or pick people out in the crowd and have them ejected. You know, now you've gone to the next level. It was, you know, it's already something that shouldn't be happening, but it should never have to reach that level. And it's just a shame that, you know, everything that's involved in going to a concert and, you know, the whole day and that night is usually such a great time. That's the last thing you want to happen to kind of, you know, bring your night down. And, you know, it's happened a couple times in the last week alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what did I do? Get in the pit night two of Camden.
but you got in fair and square.
I got in there fair and square. One of our listeners, Richard, actually found two pit tickets on the boards and snagged them for me. And so we were in the pit at face value, which is always nice, because that's never the case.
Yeah.
And I will just tell you, I mean, I don't know, it's Philly and Jersey. Like, it was a particularly rowdy mm-hmm. pit. Like, maybe
Eagles chants.
Well, I think listeners should know, if you're going to do a pit or you're trying to get close, maybe Camden's not your first, you know, go.
Maybe
around.
It's not your first pit experience.
Yeah.
I think the Camden
we saw,
pit
we
is
saw
for...
it in Guilford too. You know, we were in the pit in Guilford and we saw the same things happening. You know, it's
I think it's everywhere. Yeah. I think
it sure is. Yeah.
Maybe I'm just more scared.
The entitlement that it just follows. It follows.
Yeah,
the
it
band,
does. It follows the band. Yeah.
Maybe when you're tailgating against like dumpsters and shipping containers and warehouses,
you get muscles.
You feel a little more scared than you would when you're in the magical land of Guilford. But, yeah. But wow, how about that dreaming dream?
Yeah. Speaking of Camden Night too, I mean, worth it. Worth all that trouble to get in there for a Dreaming Tree opener.
Unbelievable. Yeah, first time that that's happened since 2008. Just, you know, at this point, to get a Dreaming Tree period is a big deal. But to, you know, be standing around not knowing how the band's going to open up night two after a solid night one, and boom, it's Dreaming Tree. Mm. It's a statement opener, to say the least.
Absolutely. Any other highlights from night two?
Rolling into a drunken soldier.
Yeah. And the two That whole first run was incredible.
Yeah. Dreaming Tree, Drunken Soldier, Die Trying, American Baby Intro.
Banger after banger after banger.
Yeah.
And of course, the song that Jane likes is always nice to hear.
Right, of course.
Water into Wine, kind of like.
Yeah. Oh, and a little thing partial in the encore. I mean, whipping that stuff out.
Again, yeah, what a way to start and end. You start with that unbelievable row, that unbelievable run, and then you get to the end of the night, and the encore begins with Little Thing. I mean, just again, the band, they're out of their minds at the moment.
I mean, really, like, we literally every show that we have mentioned, there has been at least one crazy surprise that nobody is expecting, and they're really keeping us on the edge of our seats. And I'm here for it.
Here for it.
At this rate, the Gorge is going to go open with Let You Down full band and close with Dreams of Our Fathers.
Oh, would you guys agree? Gosh.
I mean, you can't rule anything out at this point. That's what I'm saying.
That's why. Yeah.
No, that bar, it keeps getting moved, you know, and then every single time that, you know, they step out there, you just naturally think, okay, maybe this is the night. This is the night that things are going to settle back down. And I do just want to add, before this insane run, I thought the band sounded really good.
Mm-hmm,
I thought it was, you know, the Walk Around the Moon tour, getting lots of those songs. Nothing wrong with that. I did think they sounded really good.
Yeah.
This is just a totally different universe that we're in right now, though.
Right. It definitely doesn't hurt that the new songs sound really great live.
Right.
Yeah. And then you throw Cha-Cha in on top of the album, and that's been so well received. It keeps growing and growing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Recipe for success right there.
Absolutely. So, guys, I mean, that was our they're goodbye forever from the Northeast. They're gone.
They're gone, but boy, they leave their mark.
Not forever, right?
Hopefully, we only have a couple months. But the Northeast, they come back, maybe
their Northeast run was pretty incredible. I'm glad we all got to experience our own versions of it. The band then heads to Alpharetta and Orange Beach this week, as well as West Palm, where they end this leg of the tour, take a few weeks off, head back into the West Coast. It's their typical summer tour. Bunch of rumors about a fall tour, so we'll see if that comes to fruition and what that looks like. I mean, it doesn't seem out of the question with an album out this year, so we'll see where that lands. But I don't know. Does anybody have any final thoughts?
Well, we've got a week left here of this version of the tour. Then we get the month break, and we'll see what these last four shows are like. I couldn't help but find myself looking ahead a little bit to what the West Coast swing of this tour looks like, and that led me to thinking, I just really hope that those West Coast folks get to experience what we've all been able to experience, especially this last month or so.
Yeah.
I hope, you know, some of those, and I hope that they get some surprises of their own as well.
Absolutely.
But I hope that some of these, like, really memorable moments that we kind of have been getting every night, it seems, you know, I hope some of those songs kind of hold on, and those folks on the West Coast, they get to sample that too.
Yeah. I have quite a few friends on the West Coast who haven't even attended their first show this year yet. So, I mean, that's just incredible. Like, we've been doing this for weeks, months now, and they haven't even started yet, you know? So I hope you're right, Sean. I hope they get surprises of their own.
I have no doubt the Gorge is going to blow their mind.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of what I wanted to say, just some final thoughts that if you're heading to the Gorge, we did a Gorge episode for you to get prepped for that. If you're thinking about Mexico, we have 3 Mexico mini episodes for you to check out. And so we'll repost that on our social media, but definitely dig through and take a listen to those, because even though we recorded them last year, they are still very relevant and helpful to prep you for those trips.
Same with our West Palm Beach episode, which if you're listening to this, it's tomorrow night. So if you're headed that way, go listen to that one as well.
Yep.
And we don't want to bury the lead, but Dave and Tim did announce that they are going back to Mexico.
Yeah.
In February. So as Trisha said, we do have some episodes in our catalog that help you prep for that if you have questions about it. And I think that that's kind of a big deal too. You know, there was a lot of talk about contracts being up and venue switches and things like that. But it seems like the 3-night run is back, which is cool.
And they've already announced who else will be there with them. Jason Isabel, The Lone Below. I think there was one more that I'm missing, but that's, we typically don't get the openers this early. So that's pretty cool to know that in advance. If you're a fan of those bands as well, get yourself a ticket. I'm still on the fence, guys. I have a few days to decide.
But that's it. We only have a few days. Like, it'll be West Palm Beach, and we're supposed to buy tickets.
Right. Mr. Jenny DMB seems to think we're going, so.
No, hey, listen.
Hey.
Listen, if I have that,
nobody puts Mr. Jenny DMB in the corner.
Exactly. And if Mr. Jenny DMB wants to go to Mexico, Jenny DMB is going to Mexico. Yeah. I ain't going to complain. I ain't going to. Yeah, exactly. Well, all right, guys. Enjoy West Palm if you're going, and we'll see you here next week. See y'all on the road.
We hope that the run continues. Let's hope we have even more to chat about.
I'll be on the edge of my seat. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.